Good morning. So how's the week been? Challenging from the Edwards end.
Yeah.
But we're here. He's here, which we are grateful for. So what did you face this week that challenged you to change? What did you face this week that challenged you to change? Not being able to breathe. Not breathing will make you change things. Yes. Yes. Having two children who are now in a schedule that you don't have control over. That's, I know. But it does change things. It does. It does. Because now you have all this time. You go, what do I do with it? Guess what? Whenever they leave the house, it even gets, you have that on steroids. It may drive you to do things like, it may drive you to do things. For me, it drove me to go find some place to coach because I wasn't chasing anybody anymore. What did you face this week that caused you to realize you needed change? You do realize that every single day there is something that we are confronted with that causes us to consider whether we need to change or not. In fact, if we're following Jesus, when we wake up in the morning and we take our first breath, there's a call to change. So I want you again to think back on where we ended up last week. We're talking about the fact that when we follow Jesus, when we are all in, the Bible has said that the Spirit of God begins a new thing in us, which is a change, and that a new thing has begun, and there is a new direction. Something changes, and it does not stop changing until when? Okay, it does not stop till we see Jesus. When we see Jesus and we see Him as He is, then it says we will be like Him. And the change, it's complete. But until then, we are challenged with the idea of changing to be more like Jesus every day. And there's going to be things that are simple, like the doctor telling us your A1C is double what it used to be, and your A1C and what's that other number? The other number. Not sugar, triglycerides, there you go. Triglycerides are double what they used to be. And it means that something has to change. And it means the way that we approach life, the things we eat, the amount that we do stuff, being more active. Something's got to change. Or something will change and we will see Jesus a lot sooner. So, how have you seen in your life from the time that you came to Jesus and He became the one who was the authority of your life, there should have been a change from who you were to who He was making you to be. So, what is different, again, about your values? What is different about your motivation? What is different about your purpose? You need to be seeing one of two things. You need to see that from the time before to the time once you made that allegiance change, that a change began and you are not the same person. Some people, again, we talk about get a big dose and the dump truck hits them fast. And others of us, it's like the truck has got a little space at the bottom. And it's losing gravel all along, or losing dirt all along the way. Okay, whichever model your life follows, change is not optional. So, values, motivation, purpose, are they different than they used to be? Whether you want to look 2 years back, or you want to look 30 years back, or 40 years back. Is it different? Are you different? Have you changed? I mean, that's a great example. Okay. there is change. You can see change. I was anxiety ridden as a child and even as a young adult. Stress, anxiety, I got stressed. I felt like I had a piece of concrete in my gut, and it just wore me out most of the time. Okay? I'm not saying that I never have that kind of anxiety. I do, but the instances of that kind of anxiety is so much less common than it was at that time. Because now I have learned that I can trust God when I face things I cannot control. Also, I've had things that God has been able to, He's let me encounter, people that have spoken into my life, whether it's through something that people have written or actual people in front of me, and they've challenged me, and I've made decisions about the way I want to live and the way I want to treat people. And I don't treat people now the way I used to. I don't see people now the way I used to. I'm changed, and I am changing. The way that I deal with anger is different now than it was when I was a younger person. I've changed, and I'm changing. So it may be my personality, it may be my behaviors, it may be the things that I value are changing. It may be the things that motivate me are different than that what once was. Now, I might be able to say that from the day that I became a believer, it was pretty clear to see that my purpose changed. Because it was no longer my main purpose was about me or what was going in life from a self-centered position. It was more about what God was doing and but I still had the trappings and the vestiges of what it meant to be me-centered that I had to learn how to give those things up. Because I didn't realize how me-centered it was. I believe that one of the things that I can challenge you with this morning is I challenge you to start writing things down so that you can trace the changes that God is bringing about in your life. Whenever He brings something up in front of you and says, see this thing? That thing, the way it is right now, is not honoring me and it needs to change. And you need to change because it is a part of your life, the one that I gave you. And so I want you to start documenting what God is telling you about you and your life that needs to change. Why would I ask you to do that? What happens when somebody asks us the question that I asked you this morning and you have nothing to say? And we have a gospel that says, you're a new creation. Really? This is one of those simple questions that's really hard. The reason why I want you to write things down is because I want you to be able to have something to share. See, you may not be like, I mean, I forget things pretty easily too, but Dusty and I can tell you some stories. Okay? Stories roll out of our memories like water over a waterfall. And if you tell me, I can tell you 15 stories. I could sit up here and I could bore you with stories. Now, the first two might be kind of fun and interesting, but after that, the stories, because they're all remarkable, but you hear so many of them that you begin to kind of get calloused to them. But still, you need to be able to share with people how God has worked in your life. What change has He brought in your life? Because that's what they need to, that they need to know that's true. And if you and I can't share that from our life in a real way, why should they believe? They want living proof. And God's putting us in their lives. We have got to either cultivate an awareness of what God's doing in our lives so that we can see the... And the way that I know to start that is by writing it down. You can cultivate awareness in your mind as to what change God has brought in your life. It may be how He helps you learn how to forgive somebody. And that's a change that He brings about in your life. It may mean that you don't tend to be one of those folks who has a servant heart, and He then challenges you with being a servant, with being someone who does something for somebody with no gratitude, no thank. And maybe that, and that's a lesson. And then that's change. That's becoming more like Jesus. Whatever those lessons are, we need to create a compendium of what God challenges us with and then how He helps us accomplish and live that change. Not only will that give us a testimony, but it will encourage us because we can look back and say, you know, I remember when, and now I'm not. And it's an amazing thing because I can track. Doesn't that sound cool? That you get to be a living historical record. I just encourage you to be active and not passive. Because the problem is sometimes when we become passive, we then fail to really see the work that God is doing in us. And we need to know what God's doing in us. Because one, it encourages us to see it. And number two, it gives us this testimony that we know that God is building in us to use for His glory. Because that's the whole purpose of it. Now, you need to listen to God about this. See, some of us, if we wrote down everything going through our head, we would be writing volumes every day. Okay? Then there's some of us that, you know, that's not where we live, and everything's pretty much an advertisement. You know, 30 seconds, and we get it. Okay? If you're one of those who are kind of like me, is that you feel like, gosh, I have to write it all. Just try to work on the skills of paraphrasing and summary. Okay? Summary is put the whole thing in two sentences. Paraphrase is take what you hear and put it in your own words. So doing those two things as we describe how God's calling us to change and then how we change, try not to get stuck in the Britannica edition. And writing it, you know, writing everything and feeling like you have to write volumes. All right, John, next slide. So after we consider how have you changed, we need to look at are we different and is that good? So let's look at that first question. What makes you feel like you do not fit? What makes you feel like you do not fit? Fit in the culture. What makes you feel like you do not fit? Well, in this case, the context in which we're talking about, being foreigners and aliens in this world and being citizens of another. So our eternal heavenly citizenship being the way we ought to live, but we're in a temporal world that is very different. There's supposed to be a class. So what makes you feel like you do not fit? Backbiting, undercutting, casting. Yeah, I think the expression these days for most of that is throwing shade. You know, I mean, I read that on the internet all the time. So and so is throwing shade on. Well, you know, it's like it just means that they're being critical, they're undercutting, they're doing backbiting, all that kind of stuff. Okay, but that's the new expression is throwing shade. I don't fit because I don't like extremes of any type. And yet the culture is trying to push people to the edges and act like there is nothing that exists in between the extremes, whether it be political or social or economic or anything. There's nothing in the middle. Everything exists on the edges. I know that my values are more, I mean, increasingly are not shared by the culture that I live in. Now, that's not to say that there aren't people within the culture that don't like it that I have the values that I do. Because there are many people that like it whenever people demonstrate concern or kindness or integrity or politeness, you know, those things. They like it. It may not be their value, but they like it. They appreciate it. Sometimes it's even in our workplace. We feel like we don't fit. There are things where I know that where I work during the week, that there are things that I do share with my peers, and then there's things that I really know that I don't share with my peers, and I do the best that I can to engage them in non-adversarial conversation on those things that I know would be a trigger. John, next question. So do you accept the feelings and consequences that come with being countercultural? In other words, when you know you don't feel like you, when you know you don't fit, what are the feelings that go along with that? And do you accept those consequences for being the fish that goes upstream instead of downstream with the flow? That's how you know you're doing things right. But do you really? I mean, that's where we are supposed to be, I believe. I do believe that is exactly what we're supposed to be. But honestly, most of the time, we at least flinch whenever we sense the culture coming at us and we don't fit. Absolutely. It's echoed again. We were reading 1 Peter this week, and it's there too. They did it with Jesus. They're going to do it with you too. But still, we have to get beyond what is our reaction when it really happens. When somebody either criticizes you or tries to undermine you or lies about you for the reason, not because yes, you deserve that, but because for them that they somehow perceive that you are other. You're not like them. You know, somebody jokes about something at work, knowing that you're the person that doesn't fit, and they're joking about you, and they know that you know. But everything's very, very generic. Or, I mean, you know what I mean. People make comments or tell jokes or whatever. Back whenever I was in my, I guess about my third year of coaching in Atlanta, we had a new offensive coordinator that came in from another. And he said he was a Christian, but he intentionally told off-color jokes because he knew it would bother me. Well, he wasn't really my friend, just a coworker. I've got one more question that goes along with this. It's not going to be on the screen, though, because I just wrote it this morning. Here's the question. How can we avoid taking an attitude of being a victim when they really all are after us? How do we avoid having an attitude of being a victim when they really are after us? We're supposed to have the mind of Christ. The only way we get the mind of Christ is by being with Christ. So all that stuff that we need to be, it all flows out of our relationship with Him. And if we begin to neglect our relationship with Him, then we are making ourselves less sensitive and more susceptible to attacks, persecution, to lies. The force field is down. Yes, absolutely. We are. That's right. When we are building our relationship and we are trusting and we are learning and we are obeying and we're growing in that relationship as we're doing all those things, it's a lot harder for the culture to turn our heads and for us to become victims and see ourselves as victims, because we are contra-cultural in many ways, just in the fact that we breathe. And the fact that we have a new life. So, you know, where is the culture these days? Do we have any values that are not assailed? Do we have any community standards that are not challenged? Do we have any historical fact that is not reinterpreted? I could keep going on. All right, John, next slide. So the status quo that we deal with, so how does your life conflict with the status quo? It's really just another way to ask the same question we've been talking about, honestly. How does your life conflict with the status quo? A guy that I used to go listen to at a Bible study in Atlanta growing up, he came in with some great, I don't know where he got all his quotes. Some of them he'd pick up from people like Will Rogers and, you know, great historical entertainers or people, you know. But the old get all you can all you get, sit on the lid and poison the rest. In other words, cornering the market. Not only cornering the market, but making it to where you're the only one who is the dispenser of, and in this case, most of the time, it's the dispenser of authority, the dispenser of wisdom, the dispenser of what's good, what's desirable. There's some people that like to control that. That's the status quo. So what's the status quo? Status quo. Who is it that likes to control things in our culture? Who is it that likes to define the way things ought to be? And that's a conflict with the status quo. And you know, right now, culture says marriage is optional. Our understanding of what is media has changed to where now, truthfully, every single one of us that has this is a part of the media. We can post stuff on Facebook, whether it's true or not, and it will be absorbed by the culture if it is tasty enough. And we have become part of the media. Status quo says the media gets to determine what's right and what's wrong, what's interesting and what's boring, what's worth being listened to and what's not worth being listened to. Facebook, that's one of the reasons why right now, and you know, at least if you look, Facebook is under attack because they've placed themselves in the position of saying this is worthy of being posted. This isn't worthy of being posted. So they have put themselves in the position of determining what should or shouldn't be heard. That's what people are saying. I'm not trying to get into that issue. I'm just saying that's an example of media. Media is trying to tell us what is acceptable and what's not. What's desirable, what's not. What's value, what has value, and what doesn't. But like Russell said, that doesn't mean, that's just the culture. That's not what we know to be true. Because where we find the definition for what is of purpose and of value is not in media. It's not the media. There's an authority that's greater than the aggregate media that we swim in every day. John, next question. So is the new normal really the new normal? What did Solomon say? There's nothing new under the sun. They just keep packaging it with fancier bells and whistles or with different color camouflage. It's the same old, same old. John, go ahead and pop up that last question. So the real issue here is yes. Well, because it always has been. And it always will be. It certainly is countercultural. No. I'm okay. All right. I've got to pull it to a close. The thing is, again, kind of getting back to the focus here. Jesus was countercultural. He transformed culture by transforming us. And we are to do the same. And my challenge that I start out with you about has to do with us being able to document the change that's taken place in our lives. Absolutely. Does it work? Exactly. They want to know this works. They want to know this is real. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Oh, yeah. Devil can. Yeah. If it is changing me, then I have something to share. Yep. I'm going to give you a strange... I think it depends on what we believe God is doing in us. If we have accepted and embraced that change is a part of our lives, then it's easier for us to embrace change no matter how old we are. But if we're old and we have never embraced the idea that I am changing and that change is supposed to be a part of who I am, then obviously, once I'm older and I've got more ways that are set, it's going to be harder for me to change. It is so sad that we do that, isn't it? That we can't embrace God's change for us before it has to hurt or before we have to struggle or suffer. But that seems to be a part of maybe the fallen nature that we have. Okay, I need to close because it's almost 11 o'clock. Anthony, why don't you lead us?